Thanks for joining us for this final class in DWHSA's Certified Destination Wedding Ceremony Planner program. We're focusing now on some final questions you want to think about as you build out your romance travel business to head into being the wedding planner, the ceremony planner for your couples. And as the slide says, we want you to go in that direction by design, thinking about how you want to structure your business as you promote this new emphasis out to prospective couples and your current clients, of course. So there are four big questions we want to ask yourself as you head in this direction. And here are those questions. Your service and planning fees, what are you going to charge for doing this extra work? Will you accompany your destination wedding couples and groups, go along with them and be there on site to help them? Are you going to handle off-site ceremonies? And what specific clauses, language, should be in your client agreements now to make them very applicable to destination weddings? So let's dive in. The first big question is, what are you going to charge? Now, of course, you're probably already charging some type of travel service fees. You may not be, and that's totally fine. It's always your decision. But given how much extra work and stress will be involved in serving as not just the travel advisor, but also the ceremony planner for these destination weddings, we recommend that you at least think about charging some types of planning fees for the ceremony work. And the best way to do this when you're beginning as a certified ceremony planner is to start small. Think about adding on a basic ceremony planning fee that does not involve you going along on the trips with clients or even getting deep into the nitty-gritty details of the ceremony. But this basic fee could involve you just being the sounding board, the opinion sharer for your couple. So what you would offer is helping set them up with the on-site coordinator at the resort or on the ship, and then you helping them pick the package, the ceremony package that they need. And then once that's selected, doing the initial calls, online meetings with the coordinator, walking the couple through all the choices they'll need to make with the package they've chosen, and staying in touch then with the couple and the coordinator from that point on until they depart for the ceremony trip. So you're basically going to be a handholder with this basic fee. Now, once you've got your feet wet with that basic level of service, at that point, you could do what many members have done who've gotten into ceremony planning, and that's offering a three-part range of ceremony fees. Level one would be just what we talked about, giving feedback and opinions only. Level two would be jumping in with more detail, actually planning out the ceremony components, helping the couple figure out what they want to do with the music and how they're going to provide the music, as we've talked about in other lessons. Looking at the flowers, do they want to customize the flower selection that's in the package they chose? Do they need off-site florist help in the destination? And so on. And then really staying on top of those details, including even maybe making some calls while they are on site at the resort or on the ship, just to make sure everything's going on as planned. The top level could be everything in level two, plus you're actually going to be there. You go along with the couple and the guest on the trip. And of course, there's lots of wiggle room in between those three levels. And you'll need to come up with some catchy names for those levels. Level one, two, and three won't do it. And you probably don't want to say bronze, silver, and gold. So come up with some cute names for those three levels. As you sit down and think about how you want to do these planning fees, consider the time you're going to invest in each of those levels. And you might think about levels 1, 2, and 3 and decide that at this point you don't want to go along with couples. So maybe you'll stop with level 2. So again, sit down some afternoon, some weekend, and think about with each of the levels, how much time would you invest in each of those levels of service? And then you've got to think about what you'd like to earn out of providing each level of service to the couple. And look at the hours involved and make sure it's going to be worth your while to provide each of those 3 levels. For most members, level 1 would probably be pretty easy to accommodate. It's levels 2 and especially level 3 where you really have to make sure you're charging a sufficient amount of fees to cover the time you're going to invest in doing those upper levels of service. And as we'll talk about later in the fourth question about what goes in the client agreement, you want to be super clear with clients about what you will provide in these levels and what you will not provide. The second big question is, are you going to go along with your groups? More and more members are finding that it pays for them to charge a higher level of planning fee that includes their time on site, actually going along with the couples on these trips. And you have to think about some elements of how you would do this. How much support do you want to provide online? In other words, do you want to just be there and help with the ceremony only? So you want to support the on-site coordinator helping with day of coordination tasks? Or do you want to provide more service and charge more? So would you greet guests as they arrive on the property or at the ship, giving out gift bags if the couple has them? Are you going to help arrange other events that would take place on the trip, like the farewell brunch the day after the ceremony or the rehearsal dinner if there is one? Do you want to be there on site for the couple only? We have members who go on these trips and they tell the couple up front, I'm here for you. I'm not going to give out my room number. I'm not giving out my phone number. I'm not giving out my email address, anything to the guest. If they see me here, I'm going to make it clear to them, and I hope you, as the couple, will too, that I'm here for you. And that's primarily if you're going to do things like provide that day of ceremony coordination support. Or are you going to be there to help the guest? So if they see you in the lobby and they want to know where the buffet restaurant is or the air conditioning's not working in their room, and in those cases, of course, you're going to give them directions or tell them to go to the front desk and make that complaint about the air. But are you going to want to have what some members do, for example, they'll tell the guest on Thursday and Friday of the trip from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. local time, I will be in the lobby if you have questions. Or you give out you have a separate cell phone and you give out that text number to the guest and say, I'm available 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for any questions you've got, you can text me. Members do everything in that spectrum. So you just have to figure out where you want to fall as far as serving just the couple or everybody, including all the guests. Set your hours. If you are going to have open hours or flexibility to help the guest especially, you want to be very clear to set boundaries. What are your service hours? And then how are you going to communicate with the couple and the guest? Many members who do ceremony planning services like this, where they accompany the group, they have a second cell phone, with the TV said the show say a burner phone that you get from the local store. It just has that number and it's there only for the couple and the guest to use when you're going on these wedding trips. Once you've answered those questions, then you do have to have either a bigger, more detailed client agreement for destination wedding couples, or you have to have a separate agreement to provide ceremony planning services. And that's where you've really got to spell out what your fees are, the dollar amounts, and what they include, And I find it's helpful to have a second bullet point list of what your fee does not include for going along with the group. Your expenses. Typically, the couple's going to cover your airfare, your transfers, and your lodging, but you can add in other expenses that are out of pocket for you, like parking at your home airport for the trip. It's up to you. In many cases, things like the lodging can actually be covered by using one of the comp rooms that typically would come with a destination wedding group. And then again, bullet point list spelling out in detail what you will do on site and what you will not do on site. And you absolutely have to be as specific as possible. And then if you are going to be there just for the couple or for everybody, that needs to be in this agreement. The days and the hours you're going to be on site, and the preferred ways you want everybody, whether it's the couple only or all the guests, to communicate with you. If it's in the agreement, then there's no disagreement later. There's no confusion later because you whip out the signed agreement and you can show if the couple's complaining to you that you're not helping the guests with questions, you can point out that in the agreement for you to go along on the trip, you were clear that you were there for the couple only. So we have a great webinar that one of our longtime members, Jenny Chaffer, did. She does a lot of travel like this with her wedding groups. And she did an awesome webinar for us where she shared how she puts her packages of service together, her levels 1, 2, and 3. She was nice enough to share what she charges. So it's a great background for this. And we included a link to the audio recording of her presentation in the resources page for this program. So you can look for that. It's down at the bottom of the resources page below the videos for this year's classes. Okay, next to last question. Are you going to deal with off-site ceremonies? This is a trend that's been around for a long time, but it's really grown over the years because so many couples want their own unique arrangements. They don't want the same ceremony venue, the same ceremony package that every couple before them and every couple after them is going to have at the resort or on the ship. They want something different. And so they want to go offsite. When we say offsite, this can be a public beach or a private beach that you can get access to. This can be restaurants. In the Cancun area, for example, there are farm-to-table restaurants, and there's a really well-known flower farm that has a venue and has catering options there. This can be an offsite house or villa. It can be a local attraction of some sort. It can be a museum or a church. If you're doing Catholic destination weddings, this could be the chapel or the local Catholic church that you've got permission to do the ceremony in. And remember, we have a whole separate webinar in our library that's in dwhcmembers.com about Jewish and Catholic destination weddings. So it's doing the ceremony away from the ship or the resort. Don't say automatically, I'm never going to do that. It sounds like so much work. It's really basically planning a longer day-long excursion. And you'll find there are lots of options with destination management companies, with off-site venues that really promote their services this way that you can find through the DMC that you're working with or the tourism office. Or even other members, if you go in the Facebook group and say, I've got a couple in Playa del Carmen and they want to go off the resort, where what would everybody recommend? You'll get good recommendations from those areas. So there's some great reasons, again, to go off-site. The couples are then not going to be constricted by the rules of the resort, like not being able to use off-site vendors. There are some resorts that ban that. There might be early cutoff times, like 8 p.m. Maybe the reception has to be over at 9, but your couple would like to keep the dancing going. With an offsite venue, there may be more flexibility around those rules. It could be more private offsite. Sometimes couples are worried that if they do the ceremony on site and it's in a fairly public area, like a gazebo that's on the beach, they worry that members of the public or other resort guests are going to be walking by looking at them in the gazebo. the guests can still stay on the ship or on the resort and enjoy those all-inclusive rates and perks of being on the ship or at the resort. But then it's almost like when they get on that little mini bus to go off-site for the ceremony, it's almost like it's a secret trip. It heightens the specialness of the ceremony because it's kind of cool that they're going to get on the bus to actually go somewhere different to watch the ceremony. And then if you have couples who really want to incorporate local customs, local culture, there are ways to weave that into an offsite venue more effectively sometimes than doing this on-site. So there are some steps here to getting an offsite ceremony put together. First, you've got to find the place. So again, you can go through a local destination management company, check your consortium or your host agency's preferred supplier list for DMCs, tourism office for that destination, fellow members of the association can help you. And surprisingly, even the resort coordinator, the on-site coordinator, if you just make it clear, and the couple will make it clear that they do not want an on-site ceremony, you'd be surprised. Many coordinators know these off-site options and would be great to recommend somebody. So once you know where the venue will be, then of course you've got to check in with the venue, make sure it's available on the date and the time that the couple prefers, and you've got to check the booking details. Are there any permits that are required for that off-site venue? Make sure you check out the staff by talking to them. Make sure they've got experience. Ask for references for past weddings that they've hosted. Make sure it's not just a local restaurant that's decided to jump into the wedding business overnight. And then once you feel comfortable, then you can confirm the venue and lock in the date and the time. You want a written agreement for all of that, of course. And then you've got to work with a couple to give the venue as accurate a guess about what the final guest count is going to be. And as the slide says, if it is a sunset ceremony, you want to work on the timing, make sure that you allow plenty of extra time for the transfer to get the guests there mid-afternoon, for example, so that everybody's in place by the time the sun starts going down. You want to talk to the venue and find out which ceremony vendors they offer. And then you've got to fill in the gaps they don't offer with other offsite vendors. So you want to talk to the offsite venue and say, do you recommend a photographer? Do you have your own catering arrangements? Do you have an officiant that you always use? And when they say no, then you've got to find the offsite vendors. And again, remember, you've got the tourism office, you've got the onsite coordinator, you've got other members of the association, all those different avenues that can also recommend those offsite vendors. So about a month before the ceremony, you want to reconfirm all those arrangements with the venue and with the vendors and give them an updated guest count at that time. And you may need to give them a final guest count closer in, like a week out or a few days out. And then if you are traveling with the group, it doesn't hurt when you arrive in destination to go ahead yourself and make arrangements to go visit the offsite venue maybe within a day of getting there. And you might want to take the couple with you so you can check everything out together. And ask the couple well in advance if they think they might want to take the wedding party over the day before if the venue has availability and do a rehearsal, just so everybody feels comfortable with that offsite location. Now, if you feel that this is more service than you want to offer, what some members do is they'll find a locally based wedding planner who can step in and help put the offsite ceremony details together. Now, we have another longtime member, Jennifer Borg, who's based in Jamaica. She owns a wonderful property. She's a Canadian agent, but she also owns a wonderful offsite property called Borgin Villa in Jamaica. And she did a very detailed webinar for us about the steps involved in putting an offsite ceremony together. You can find the recording in the library webinar video library under training inside our member site. That's the date that we did it. And we're going to redo it here early next year. But that's her handout. And the handout has a lot of the steps that she talks about. All right, final question. What clauses, what language do you need in your Decisio Wedding client agreements to protect yourself and to manage the expectations of your clients? Remember, having a detailed client agreement that's very specific for destination weddings not only protects you, but it also helps the couple. So don't worry that you look at all the clauses we're going to talk about here and you think to yourself, my God, this is going to be a 20-page agreement. It probably won't be that long, but it could be 8 to 10 pages. That's okay. After COVID, after the pandemic, I should say, many couples understand that there are a lot of details to these types of trips. And when you explain to them, this protects them as well as you because it lets them know exactly what you're going to be doing for them, when it's going to happen, how much it's going to cost them. So again, it really protects their interest because remember, you are now legally and practically their wedding planner for the destination wedding. So some basics. You want complete contact information for yourself, your agency, that is, and your couples. So you need your legal name, whatever your legal business name is, and that includes any doing business as name for your agency, your address, your phone number, your email, as well as the same information for both members of the couple. If you've been dealing just with the bride, the client agreement needs to be listed with both of them and be signed by both of them. You do want this list we keep talking about, the detailed bullet point list or a paragraph, a couple of paragraphs maybe, spelling out what you will do for the client and another paragraph or list, what you will not do. And then any expectations you have for the couple, they will honor deadlines, they will pay on time, etc. And you can word that artfully where you're not saying, don't be a deadbeat, but make it clear that those are expectations you have. You also want to make sure that you ask them, how do we need to communicate back and forth as we're planning this wedding? And I always think it's best to get two means of communication. So you can ask your couple, what's the number one preferred way, as we have a lot to talk about as we're putting this wedding trip together, what's the best way you want me to reach out to you and you're going to reply to me? Do you want me to text you, call you on the phone, send you an email, and then say, what's the next best way for me to get in touch with you? This helps you later if the couple comes back and says, we're not hearing from you. You're not communicating on time. It's great to say, well, I've actually got all these texts, and you told me in the client agreement you preferred me to reach out to you first by text. And so check your text. Then what your fees are, the dollar amounts, when they're due, and how they're paid. For example, we have members who don't take cash and don't take checks. If that's the case, it is best to have a little bit of language in the client agreement saying you will only take credit debit cards. Any policies you have, including extra fees for doing rebookings, for handling cancellations, you might have your own cancellation fees, for example, on top of what the suppliers might charge. And then both members of the couple and you need to sign this thing. You can do electronic signatures like DocuSign or HelloSign. Those are legal too, of course. All right, now there are some destination wedding specific clauses. You want to make sure if they insist on having a lawfully binding ceremony, when they say I do in the destination, they are at that moment legally married, or they need a religiously compliant ceremony, South Asian, Jewish, Catholic. You want a little bit of language that says you are going to help them, you're going to do research with them, you're going to gather information for them about what it means to have a lawful ceremony or a religiously compliant ceremony. But the language should say, in the end, it is their responsibility to meet those requirements. You're going to tell them what's required, help them find vendors who can help them, like a Jewish rabbi, but in the end, it's their job to make sure they meet those requirements. You don't want to take on the legal responsibility where you're almost guaranteeing that the Catholic ceremony goes off without a hitch. Meanwhile, the couple makes some decisions, like they do not want to go offsite to a local Roman Catholic chapel or church, which is almost required for destination weddings that are Catholic weddings. They decide they don't want to do that. In the end, they don't do that. And so it's not a Catholic ceremony in the eyes of the church, and they blame you for that. You want to make sure you let them know you don't control the suppliers. You don't own the airplanes. You don't own the resort property. So you are an agent for the suppliers. And we have language in our resource center and many sample contracts that will help you say that. Basically, you're just saying, I'm the travel agent. The suppliers, they decide how to run their properties and their ships and their airplanes. And I'm not responsible if the airplane doesn't take off or if the ship has to skip the port where we plan the wedding because of the hurricane coming. You also don't know about any health hazards like the next version of COVID that might develop. It doesn't hurt to actually put in a link. If you're US-based to the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you're Canadian, the Canadian Public Health Agency, to actually put links in there in your agreement. You also strongly recommend, you really cannot require completely that they buy travel insurance, but strongly recommend they consider. This is good language to use. You strongly recommend they consider, they think about travel insurance and maybe even wedding insurance if it's applicable. Remember that we're doing this in October 2025. We just had a member, Sharon Little, who has helped develop a new insurance product that covers cancellations for destination weddings. And check your email or email us at support@dwhsa.com if you cannot find the information about her program. We're glad to share that with you. If any wedding guests do a chargeback, this happens. The wedding guest goes on the trip, they come home, they're devious, they contact their credit card company and said, oh, the trip was a disaster. Even though they stayed the whole time and had a great time, they didn't raise a peep of a complaint while they were there, but they're devious, they're fraudulent. They want to come home and not pay for the trip. So they contact the credit card company and say, the trip was bad. Can you please take this off my credit card? And credit card companies will do that. They'll reverse the entire charge for the entire trip off the credit card of the consumer. So you want language that spells out that if a client, a guest does that, the couple will be held responsible by your agency for paying you back for the amount of the chargeback. That way, the couple goes back to the guest and says, what the heck are you doing? We're having to pay for this amount. So it's a great way to protect yourself. And if the couple tries to do a chargeback, that you reserve the right to file a legal claim like small claims court against them to recover those planning fees. This happens too, I'm sorry to say. You've heard of force majeure, things that happen outside your control, acts of God. So you really want a clause that's very comprehensive about what acts of God might mean. And here's a sample that you're welcome to use. You might take this to a local attorney, explain the business you do, maybe give it to a travel attorney. This is a sample paragraph that you can work with, but this says that you cannot control epidemics, earthquakes, hurricanes, etc. And so, whatever might happen to a wedding trip based on something out of your control, this clause protects you. Now, this is more language you might look at if you are going along on wedding trips. So this is language you could put in there to explain your fee, and just covers you. In fact, if there are any disagreements about what happens when you accompany a wedding couple. So again, this is language you're welcome to use. This is in your handout. And this is the second part, the rest of that clause, that sample clause, if you go on the wedding trips. Actually, there are three slides of that. That's a big clause, but it covers a lot. It basically protects you if there are any disagreements later about what you're doing going along on the trip. And we actually have an entire sample client agreement that's oriented to to Destination Weddings. We have two awesome members, Charity Peaver, who's a longtime Destination Wedding specialist agent. And then we have another agent, Glenisa Gelliard, who's not only an agent, she's a travel attorney. And they gave us their client agreements for wedding trips. We took their language, combined it. We didn't copy what they did, but we kind of looked at what they covered and came up with a version that incorporated the topics, not their, we didn't steal their language, but they gave it to us to use as models to put this sample together. So that's a link. By the way, please don't. Two other members. So imagine how they'd feel if they knew that work they helped us do ends up in the hands of agents who are not paying dues to support the organization. Thank you for that. All right. You've been through six lessons with us. In 2025, here, we have basically doubled the content in this course for certifying as a ceremony planner for destination weddings. I hope you found this helpful. We're going to be sending you all the exam links, the codes, all the instructions for taking the online exam. It's a 30-question exam that's drawn from a questions bank with about 80 questions. So we have about 80 possible questions with the outside testing service. That service uses the computer to pull 30 randomly, 30 questions randomly. So your test will be different from the next agent who takes the test. You have to answer 80% or 24 of the questions correctly. And you can take the test again and again till you do. And then you'll receive the certification logo, a certificate showing you are a certified destination wedding ceremony planner. And then you'll be done. If you have any questions about this lesson or the entire program, reach out to us anytime. Thank you again for being such a supportive member. And good luck to you as you branch out into ceremony planning.